This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I'm Greg Crumpton, your host, and insight bringer today, because I am very, very excited about our guest today. As you know, we talk to a lot of people on this show who are impactful in a lot of different ways, we hope, and we find. And specifically around blue-collar and skilled trades people, as y'all know, that's my background. We've had a lot of very highly educated people on this show, and I hope y'all learned a lot from it, because I'm always up for learning. But today we're bringing somebody in who the name of his company speaks to what he does. Today we've got Mac Story, Blue Collar Leadership, and I can't think of a better name, Mac, than that to have on the Straight Outta Crumpton show. So welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Greg, and it's a privilege to be on the Straight Outta Crumpton show. That's a neat name. You got a neat name and a neat spin on your podcast name. So it is a privilege to be here. I don't take it lightly. It's what you're doing, what I'm doing, it's what our country needs. It's needed at work, at home, in school, in church, everywhere you go, it's missing. Yeah. I mean, we're suffering from leadership malpractice all around the world.
Man, I haven't heard that term, but I think I'm going to steal that one today and use it elsewhere. So
I think I heard it from, if I remember right, Bob Chapman, I think, said that. He's a CEO of Barry Waymiller, about a $3 billion company with about 13,000 people. And he's the best example I know of a really big company doing what I talk about all the time. And he's in a manufacturing space. Engineer and manufacturer.
Well, he would know firsthand. So before we get going, why don't you, if you will, take a jiffy and tell us about Mac Story. Tell us about Blue Collar Leadership and how and why you came to be doing what you're doing. I think it's a fascinating story.
Okay. So just a little on my background, I'm a manufacturing guy from 1988 to 2008. I was in manufacturing. I went to Marine Corps Reserve Infantry Unit right out of high school. As soon as I got done with all that training, actually my bunk mate at Camp Geiger in North Carolina happened to be from a little community close to where I was from in Alabama. Both of us from little towns, and his dad happened to be a manufacturing supervisor. So that's how I got started in manufacturing, was just through my bunk mate at infantry school. So then I started out the first 10 years working on frontline entry-level positions. I was operating CNC lathes, mills and drills and gear shapers and broaches and, you know, everything to do with cutting metal. And did that the first 10 years, and then finally started kind of working my way up when I enrolled in a community college just to get a two-year business degree. But I ended up going for about 7 years to get a four-year degree. I ended up in business, but I had a lot of engineering-type positions, even though I had just only a business degree. But I just had a lot of experience. So started programming CNC lathes and had to learn to operate about 70 of them. I was a setup person before I started programming them. And then I got into cost estimation engineering and special projects and that sort of stuff. And then I graduated college and actually left the company I'd been at that time, 14 years, went across town, doubled my pay. So the college was worth it. That's all I wanted it for was to turn a key on a door to open the next door. And it worked perfectly. And, got hired in that spot as a cost estimation engineer. And then I got into process improvement about a year after that. And then our company went down the lean manufacturing path. And that company was about a $3 billion company with about 70 plants around the world. And basically CEO rolled out initiative. Everybody needs to go lean. That was about that simple. There was not a lot of support or anything like that, but they did send down one consultant, and he led three lean teams, Kaizen teams at one time. It was kind of our first exposure. And we had already did 5S though for about 6 months or so, really getting squared away and organized. And he came in, and once I saw what he was doing, I was like, oh, Mac Story can do that. I can do what he's doing. And so we kicked into a whole different gear, really we went from minus 3% gross profit margin at our plant to plus 35% in just in 3 years. I mean, we added 50 new jobs without having to hire a single person. We freed up that much waste in our processes, and we moved a 30,000 square foot offsite warehouse. We were overproducing so much, we had to have an offsite warehouse about 10 miles across town. We had 150,000 square foot building, and we actually freed up about 75,000 square feet producing the same thing. So then we brought in our warehouse back inside of our plant, and then we added four new departments. That's where all those jobs come from. And I mean, that's how much waste is in most processes. It doesn't matter if it's construction or manufacturing, they just a ton of waste in the process. And anyway, 2008, I decided to step out, show how smart I was, Greg, in the middle of the Great Recession, when everybody was losing their jobs. I quit my job after 20 years and started my own lean manufacturing consulting business. And it took me about maybe 6 months, and then I was booked solid every week for the next 4 years. And then in 2012, 4 years later, that's when I started doing what I'm doing now. And just to back up so it makes a little sense, in 2005, right about when we started our lean journey in that plant I was working in, a friend of mine took my iPod, and he said, I'm going to take it. I was actually a lean manager reporting to the plant manager then, supporting other managers with lean around the country and in Mexico. And he said, he was a frontline quality technician. He said, I'm going to take your iPod, put some music on there for you. I said, all right, man. He took it. He brought it back. And when he handed it to me, he said, hey, I put a business book on there for you. I guess he thought because I was an upper level manager or whatever, I'd be interested in this business book. And I said, well, what is it? He said, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Boom.
I said, okay, is it any good? He said, I don't know. I ain't ever listened to it. And I didn't know at the time, but it was a 1 hour audio highlight. You know, the whole book, probably 13 hours, but I didn't know nothing about that type of content.
Well, that was probably a good way to start.
Oh, it was a real good way. I mean, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. If I'd have started with the whole book, a paperback or the whole audio book, I may not have ever went through it. Makes your head hurt, that book will. You got to really unravel it. So anyway, I didn't listen to it though for 3 years. Like, I'm a slow learner. So when I started my consulting business, I'm driving around trying to hook up with clients and talk to folks and get some business, because I started cold turkey. I didn't have a business name. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have nothing except this is what I'm going to do. I was passionate about process improvement. So then I'm driving around, you know, 3 years later, I got my iPod plugged in, listen to my music. And all of a sudden the song goes off and a guy starts talking. I'm like, what is this? I forgot about it. But it wasn't music. I'm like, what is this? And I looked at the stereo I had in my iPod plugged in, and it said, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I was like, that's that business book Zach said I need to listen to. And I'm in business and I ain't got any business. Maybe I ought to listen to it.
That's a weird concept, isn't it?
That's how my journey started though, Greg. And I figured out it's not a business book now. I know it's a personal growth and personal development, leadership development book is what it is, but I didn't know that. And you know, I started listening to it, and the very first team I had, because between 2005 and 2012, I logged 11,000 hours leading Kaizen teams. Basically, I show up on Monday. Yeah, man. I see that. You know what that means, though, literally. You know, a lot of people don't know, but I'd get a new team, and that's a loosely used term for on Monday. They were a team by Friday, but Monday was just a group of 6 to 10 people, and we had an objective to go accomplish some type of improvement. And they hated me, and they hated Lean, they hated each other, and sometimes they hated the boss. So that's where I got to hone my leadership skills, was getting a team that wasn't a team on Monday and got to give some results by Friday.
I think you outlined that in one of your books, if I remember reading that. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a book called Blue Collar Kaizen, Leading Lean and Lean Team.
That's right. That's where
it actually, it describes everything about how did I leverage leadership and personal growth to launch those teams. And because I got ridiculous results every week, it wasn't because of me. It was because these principles actually deliver results if you align with them. So the very first Kaizen team I had, though, I introduced that 1 hour audio. And the reason is And this is where my passion comes from, Greg. You was asking. It's a long answer to all this stuff, but interrupt me if you've got questions, but I'm trying to.
No, it's fascinating. Keep rolling.
30-something years into like 5-10 minutes right here to kick off. And so during my 20 years of manufacturing, no leader ever invested one penny or 1 minute, ever introduced me to anything like this. I mean, I just shared with you how I got introduced to it. A frontline coworker, in a manufacturing plant, thought enough of me to just put that on my podcast. I mean, on my iPod.
He'd never heard it.
he said, when I asked him that, I said, is it any good? He said, I ain't never listened to it. But he said, my friend's dad talks about it all the time. And, you know, I was a good bit older than him, so he probably thought, you know, something I'd be interested in. He was just trying to be nice.
Two old guys bonding.
Yep. But I never got introduced to it. No leader. No leader ever.
That's a shame right there.
And so when I introduced it to the Kaizen team, the first one, and that was in probably 2009 when I really got rolling. I introduced that and I said, I need you guys to do me a favor. I said, I come across this 1 hour audio and it's fascinating to me. It's profound stuff I ain't never thought about, but I need to think about. And I said, I just want y'all to do me a favor. I said, it's going to take an hour, maybe boring to you. I don't know. I'm going to play it through my computer. We had a couple of little tiny speakers, you know, sitting by the computer. And I said, we're going to listen for an hour and we'll get done. Y'all tell me if I'm just the only one interested in this, I don't need to share it anymore, or it's something worth sharing with everybody. And it was unanimous. Everybody says, oh, you need to share that every week. And wow. So, and we had a good conversation around it. So I started sharing it every week and it was powerful. I hadn't written any books then. I didn't have my own books. So what was funny was the second time I shared it, I had to hit pause and talk about something, how I had applied that principle in my life. And so then I started sharing that principle, repeating it. And then I started basically sharing a story with it. And it didn't take long. Instead of doing process improvement events, that company wanted me to do something I called a lean leadership certification. So we took everybody. It was about 1,200 people through that company. We took everybody through what I called a lean leadership certification. It was about 75% personal growth and development, about 25% highlighting what are the lean tools, what is it, why we do it. But because the main thing was the character development of the people, the mindset of the people. And so I was able to influence them. They bought like 1,200 copies of the 7 Habits and they bought the videos and the audios, and we would show that, or I would show it. But I was pausing a lot. Basically what I was doing, I wasn't teaching them his stuff. I was letting him teach them his stuff through the videos they bought, but I was interpreting it. What does that mean to me? What's it mean to you? And
how to apply it.
Yep. And that's what I was doing with his content. But I started reading and Greg, I've been reading every day since that day I hit play on that audio in that car by accident. That's 16 years almost now, every single day. And today I've got 15 of my own books, and my wife and I together have 34, and we speak all over the country and beyond.
You know, I watch what you and Rita do online a lot, and I'm flabbergasted at the amount of content that y'all put out. Video, audio, books. I mean, y'all are a freaking powerhouse, man.
Well, I tell people it's what we do. I mean, it's not a job. It's our passion. It's a calling. You know, it's not a career. Like being on this podcast with you, all someone's got to do is ask, you know, as long as their podcast seems like they got decent character. And, you know, I turned down one recently. I got on there to preview it, and the guys, you know, drinking beer and using profanity while they're doing the, I was like, you know, I don't judge people about that, but my brand, I don't want to mix my brand with that. Well, that's not who I am, but I would love to be on there, but I just turned that one down.
Well, maybe we'll set a new low mark for you without any beer drinking. So, but no kidding, Mac, I appreciate the sentiment behind that, because, you know, everything we do is a reflection of your character. And it's been really interesting to me over the last, I would say 60 years, but I don't remember all of my 60 years, maybe the last 55. But it's remarkable of how you evolve as a human and how you tend to do a better job of policing yourself, maybe, is a way I look at it. You know, and I don't mean that in a police sense, but just a keeping your poop in a pile as you get older gets easier, it seems like. So
yeah. And I tell people, you know, our product and our brand is our character. You know, absolutely. We don't really collaborate with people because I don't want to, not saying I'm any better than anybody else, but we want to be who we are to our, you know, when you call my cell phone or my number, or I answer the phone,
right.
I want to talk to you. And, you know, it's like those people on that podcast, they're great guys. They're doing good stuff. And I would love to speak to their audience. I just don't want to muddy my brand.
Co-mingle. Yeah.
And again, I just share, I quit drinking alcohol 4 years into my growth. I had drank since I was 15 in high school, and I was the party drinker, though. I'd go 6 months during hunt season, bow season, rifle season, you know, during deer season, not drink a drop because I was the party guy, but I didn't party when I was hunting. I was hunting all the time.
Right.
But, so 4 years into my journey, I quit using profanity and quit using alcohol. And what I started to figure out after I started growing was, like, Jimmy Collins, the former president and COO of Chick-fil-A, he was Truett Cathy's third staff employee back in 1967. He retired 2001 after 33 years. He's 87, will be 88 this year, but he's been a friend and mentor of mine since 2015 of mine and Rhea's. And, you know, what I learned, the reason I'm telling about him was, if I was that guy I used to be using profanity and drinking alcohol, he wouldn't be my friend and mentor. He'd probably love me as a person and respect me, but we wouldn't be talking and he wouldn't been on my podcast and all that sort of stuff. So what I figured out when I'm trying to grow my influence was, when I don't drink, I can influence two sets of folks. I can influence the people who do drink, as long as I don't judge them, because I don't care who drink. They can do what they want to do. I don't care who uses profanity. I don't drink Cokes either, and I don't hold nothing against people who don't drink Cokes. I drink water.
Right.
But some people with a high enough character that they really, really don't value alcohol, I couldn't influence those people. So I figured out, I quit drinking alcohol, I quit using profanity, I could influence some really high character people. And as long as I don't judge people, I can influence everybody else too. So that's what I started trying to figure out. How can I maximize my influence? And it's to be the best role model I can be for everyone. And that's just, when I decided to go down this journey, I told my son, Eric, I said, you know what my competitive advantage is going to be in this space? It's going to be the degree that I try to live. I actually do live what I teach. That's because I was behind, you know, I didn't even just, when I hit play on that audio, I was 39 years old. I was like, and I didn't have a plan for doing this, but by 2012, I did want to do this. So then I was 43. So I'm like, man, all these people have been doing this for years and years and years, and I'm starting late. So how can I accelerate my journey is to try to be the best role model that I can be for other people, but not expect them to be like me. I want to help them be the best version of themselves.
Well, there's a lot to talk about right there, because you laid out a lot of good, valid points. I think what I get from you guys, and I don't know you personally, you know, I know you through our work and through our mutual desire to spin up blue collar people the best way we can.
Yep.
But you guys live your life 24/7 the same way, whether y'all are in the mountains, walking around the stream, or traipsing through downtown Atlanta.
You're right.
You know, but to that point, you're talking about start getting a late start. You think about people working, they work 2,000 hours a year if they're working 8 hours a day, somewhere in that ballpark. But if you live in that life 24/7, man, you can make up some good ground in a hurry, because you're not looking at it as something to do. You're looking at it as something you are.
Yeah, something to be
working towards. Yeah. So yep. I get that. I get the math on that pretty quickly. Which was never one of my strong suits, but I guess I can add 2,000 times three. So, well, tell us about. I'm really curious about the amount of stuff you do, and mainly how you churn out books, man. Because you said y'all got 34 between you, and I would have to imagine that because y'all live together and are spouses, you help each other and review and critique and, you know, look over each other's work. That's a mainly lot of just, work in between you.
Yeah, mainly we don't really get involved with each other's book till it's done. And then, you know, we like as soon as I finish writing a book, I send the electronic copy to Rhea. She goes through it. I go through it looking for typos or missing words, you know, the basic stuff. And
right.
Or anything I might have said she didn't think I should have said, or a component that I might have left out. And then I'll order the proof. And then we get the paperback copy. So I get a copy. She gets a copy. We go through it that second time. And then I make the edits, final edits, and that's it. And, you know, people don't know. I mean, I shared a podcast on it because I write a book in 7 days.
That's from incredible. Start to finish.
I go from, I ain't thought about writing this book. I mean, I got a list of like 50 I'd like to write over here on the wall, but it's just a rough idea for a name. But if I decided to pull one of them off today, 7 days from now, I'd be ordering that proof I just told you about. And that's so the way it works.
What is your writing procedure, Matt? And I'm asking this because I'm going to Maxwell in a minute, but how do you write? Do you sit down and purge and puke on the keyboard? Do you longhand it? How do you like to write?
Yeah, I'm if you see me right here, I'm just scrolling because I got a podcast episode 351. It's 30 minutes of teaching somebody how I do that. So I ain't gonna give you the 30 minute answer, but episode 351 is, you know, literally how I do it. So if somebody else could. I do it very a lean method, but I'm going to lean up that 30 minute talk real quick, but I just sit down and write it. And one reason I write so fast is I can't remember what I wrote. And I don't like to have to reread the book, because if I don't sit down and write, cause I'll do about, it takes the first 2 days of those seven, Greg, like I take that title off the wall right there. I'll figure out, okay, is this the title? What's the title need to be? What's the subtitle need to be? And then I'll say, okay, if I was going to teach somebody this, because most of my books now, since my third book, all of them after that have been basically 30 chapters, 3 pages each. I write them for people like me that don't like to read, the blue collar folks, but they seem to love to read my books because they're short and easy. Short paragraph, short chapter, short book. Everything's like right down
to the point.
Yep, but it's full of gold. Somebody told me the other day, man, your book's got all the stuff without the fluff. I said, on purpose. They said you should just make the pages yellow so I don't have to use a highlighter to highlight everything in the book. But I had that comment right there a lot from people. So like anyway, so I'll say, okay, I got a brainstorm. I do this on a sheet of paper. I'll just say, if I was going to teach you 30 things about whatever this book is about, what are those 30 things? I got to get at least 30 because I'm going to have 30 chapters. I may get, let's say if I got 50, that's okay too. So then what I do is I got my list, let's say it's 50. I say, what's the one thing off this list? If I don't teach them this, the rest of it doesn't matter. I'll slide that one over. Now I got 49 left. I do the same thing until I got 30, slid over. And then I say, okay, these 20 that are left, could they be subcomponents in any of these 30? So I can like write a paragraph or something about it. If they will, I'll slide them over as a subcomponent. If not, I just throw them away. I just don't worry about those. Then I say, okay, now, is there any logical sequence these should go through? Sometimes it doesn't really matter, but they still a better sequence, you know, how to start and end. Sure. Then because I do, most of my books don't have an introduction or a conclusion. A few of them do, but most of them are just 30 chapters. So my first three chapters, I'm trying to kind of connect with the audience. It's kind of my opening, my introduction, but they're in the form of three chapters. And then there's usually the last three chapters are kind of the conclusion. So I'm kind of wrapping it up, but it's still 3-page chapters. So I can keep my format. So that takes... And then what I do is I say, okay, now I got to come up with a cool chapter title and a cool chapter subtitle, kind of short for each one of those 30 things. And then I go through my quote file. I've been filing quotes. I've got thousands. Like you talk about how much stuff I share. I ain't never going to get to share it all because I got too much. And it's always, I'm always adding to it. I mean, I looked through my quote file the other day and I've shared about 30 something percent of my quotes. But I'm still adding to it. So I've got like, you know, 70% that I ain't even got started on and I'm still adding to it. So I don't know that I'll ever get them. Probably never will share all this. So anyway.
I know a guy in Greenville you can mail that file to and he'll help you share.
Hey, I'll send it to you. Send me an email. I'll share it with you.
I'm just kidding.
You know, every one of Every one of them that's in there, it come from me reading, listening, or hearing somebody speak. You know, I don't just go and gather quotes, you know, right, off of Google or something like that. It comes from me turning a page or hearing a podcast or, you know, stuff like that. So once I got my chapter titles, my subtitles, I pull in, I go through that file, I'm searching, and I'll have an opening quote and a closing quote for each chapter. And because of habit two from the seven habits begin with the end in mind, that's what I'm doing as I write this. So I already know what the next chapter is. So when I close out chapter one, sometimes I can get a quote that actually transfers the message onto chapter two. It's kind of a transitional quote.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So I'll do that for all 30 chapters. So now I basically got a skeleton outline, and that takes 2 days. And now all I got to do is fill in between those quotes. It's about 900 to 1,000 words, which is nothing. That ain't nothing, especially if you tell a story.
Yeah.
And so I'll knock out, you know, 6-7 chapters a day for the next 5 days and get that thing, get it done.
That's awesome.
And that's, you know, a lot of times one chapter, I'll turn it into a book because there's just so much. But, you know, for me personally, all of this growth for me, I became a Christian in 2012. I'd been agnostic my whole life, first 43 years. So I was, like I said, I'm a slow learner. I'm a late starter. But my growth led me to that. You know, I don't judge other people about that either. People can do whatever they want to do. And I mean, I started living in alignment with these principles, you know, before I was a Christian. And I knew that a lot of the people sharing the principles said they come from the Bible, and I didn't care. All I knew is they were good. And I started living in alignment with them, and my life got better at home and at work. So that's, you know, that's a big piece. But I think I'm doing, as a person of faith, I think I'm doing what God wants me to do, because I can't remember nothing. That's why I write that book like that. Because if I really spread it out, if I wrote a chapter this week and next week, well, next week I got to read this chapter before I can write chapter two. But even then, I still can't remember really what's in the first chapter. So I'm having to flip pages back to go figure out. I don't want to say the same thing again, or I got to build on off of that. So then what happened in the next week is I got to read two chapters before I can write the third chapter. And by then, if I had to do like that, I'd never write a book. So I got to keep it flowing and downloading. Like all the stuff people hear me say when I go to speak. A lot of times when I speak, I'll say, I bet you guys wonder what I'm going to say today. Me too.
Welcome to the club.
Yep. I say, don't be worried though. I know exactly what I'm going to talk about the whole time I'm here. I just don't know what I'm going to say, because I could talk about the same thing 100 different ways, 100 different days. And so don't worry about that. But I speak from the subconscious. I don't script nothing. I just, the stuff people hear me say, it just stuck. I read it. I don't study all this stuff. I didn't never study it. You know, like my favorite quote from Les Brown is, coincidence is God's way of staying anonymous. And that was my favorite quote from him before I was a Christian, when I was agnostic, saying, I don't know, I don't believe, I don't care, and you know, all that kind of stuff. That still was my favorite quote from him, because it made so much sense. But I didn't ever study it. I heard him say it one time, but I've read so much and I've heard so much on audio and so much video. When you take all the stuff that actually stuck, it's a lot of stuff.
Well, you know, I forgot who said this, but maybe it was Ben Franklin or somebody that was really smart back in the day, but they said, if you really know a subject, then, you know, that's how you're the best teacher, because you don't have to worry about how you're going to deliver the message, because you know the content so well. And when you've got that, you know, that storehouse of knowledge, you're going to be able to articulate it based upon the situation, who you're talking to, what's the setting, and it, you know, if you know your material, it's just going to come out. So, now, last question on writing: do you keyboard it? Do you tablet? Do you verbalize it, voice?
I keyboard.
Text? Keyboard. Okay. Cool.
Yep. I mean, I'm pretty. I sit down and I go. Like I say, I don't get whatever people call writer's block and all that. I don't get that. I get, how am I going to get all this into three pages? That's what I get. Like, what am I going to not say? I do the same thing on stage. Sometimes I lose my thought because I'm trying to suppress 50 thoughts that are trying to come out. And I look at Rhea, I'll be like, what was I going to say? She usually knows, because she knows we talked enough. She knows where I was at.
my buddy, Jeffrey Gittimer, he's always, you know, he writes very prolifically, And he's always like having the same problem. What can I take out of this to make it as valuable but shorter? You know what I mean? Like, what words can come out of the sentence to still get the message across? So I appreciate that part.
Yeah, I like Jeffrey's stuff. I quote him in some of my books. I got a sales book called "Who's Buying You?" Until you sell yourself, you won't sell much. And I know, actually, on the back cover, I got a quote from Jeffrey out of my quote file. It says, "The first thing prospects buy is the salesperson. The first sale made is you." And you know, that's the title of this book, "Who's Buying You?" Until you
sell
yourself.
Do you know him?
What's that?
Do you know him?
No, I've never talked to him or anything like
that. I should get you guys connected, because he is a trip, man. He'll keep you in stitches for sure.
Okay.
He was a customer of mine, is how I cold called him. And I said, "Hey, you know, I'm in Charlotte. I do air conditioning work, and you've got his office/house is in an old industrial mill."
Okay.
And, I said, "I would love to service your air conditioning because I'm a fan of yours."
Yeah.
And he said, "If you're crazy enough to cold call me after I write all this stuff, like, you've got the work." So we became buddies a long
time. That's awesome.
He comes across, you know, to different people in different ways, but he's a funny guy to hang out with. But
yeah, okay. I got his book back there, one of those there. That's...
Well, I see a lot of familiar looking dust jackets back there. So one thing I want to ask you about, I know that you're a Maxwell certified speaker. So Maxwell claims, or the website anyway, claims that they've trained like 5 million speakers through this 20-year period. How did you become certified, and did you get to spend any time with John Maxwell personally?
Not one-on-one. Let me go back to how I got certified. So May 2012, that's when I stopped drinking alcohol. So I always tell people, you know, when you, a lot of people say they don't have time to do stuff. So you know, when you stop, I always tell people, well, don't start doing something. Stop doing some things. If you stop doing some things, you get your resources back. You get time, energy, and money, and that sort of stuff. So when I stopped drinking alcohol, I got a lot of time back. I got a lot of energy back. I got a lot of money back. I got all kinds of things back. And so then I'm having to find something to do on the weekend, because that was what I always did on the weekend. And so I was still into this, you know, 4 years into my reading leadership stuff. And I had about halfway into that, the first 2 years, I discovered John Maxwell. First, I read a lot of Covey's books, and then somebody told me something about John. Actually, somebody gave me, one of those Lean team members gave me a book, John Maxwell's book, 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
Yeah.
And I was kind of resistant, because I like Covey so much. Covey's who I give credit to mentoring me through his books to transform my life. It ain't John. John is phenomenal. I love John, and I love his content, but John's the one that inspired me to become a speaker and all that. Cause I saw Covey's kind of squared away professor. I saw John on videos. I started watching his videos while I was reading his books. And I said, "Oh, I can be like John. I can't be like Covey, cause Covey's I ain't like that. Nothing wrong with Covey, but I ain't like that. I'm more like
different
John. Oh, yeah. Fun and make some jokes and self-deprecating humor and all that kind of stuff." I said, if I can just be me, I'm good to go, because I'm already me. I ain't got to change nothing. And so one Saturday morning, I was at home looking up leadership stuff, you know, just putting that energy into that. And something popped up about, he was doing a Day About Books event, but it had just closed. You know, now I know it's part of the game. They wasn't really closed. The ticket sales were closed or whatever, but they had just closed a day or two before, and I hadn't written any books. And so I was like, "Well, I want to go." He's doing an 8-hour deal to how he writes a book. So I want to go to that thing. So I reached out to those folks, and I was able to get the ticket, got me and my son a ticket. And that's a whole different story, but we ain't going to get into it. But my son hated me from age 15 to 19. I hit play on that audio in my car that day when he was 17 in 2008. And after 2 years of me working on me, my mom telling him I was changing, he gave me another chance. And when he did, I was able to rebuild that relationship with him. And he started working with me as a lean consultant with zero experience, but he started reading all these books. So anyway, I took him with me, and we went to that Day About Books. And while I was there, they talked about the John, at that time, they call it the John Maxwell team certification. And and they had a table set up. So I went over there and they told me, you know, you get licensed part of this, you go to a 3-day conference, you got to do that. That's the part you got to do. You pay $5,000, you go to that for 3 days. And I was like, okay. And he said, and you get licensed to teach, lifetime license to teach some of John's books. And at that time it was five. It's more than that now, but I don't know what it is literally now, but it's more than that. And I said, okay. I said, so I can teach? He said, yeah, you can teach. You can charge whatever you want. Do whatever you want with these books. I said, well, where do I sign up? Because that was all I wanted at the moment was that. That sold me. I didn't care about the rest of it. It was, the rest of it was awesome, and it was a good bonus. And all kinds of teaching and learning. They had online university and all that stuff. I was able to go through, and they had phone calls and videos, like stuff more than you ever going to listen to. So also signed up Eric. He was right beside me. I signed him up. So we just, before that, I had only spent money on a book. And then we spent about $800 a piece, I think, to go to that Day About Books deal. That was the first money I really spent first time I'd ever been in a conference or anything like that. And, and so the next thing was dropped $10,000. So my investment in myself, it was changing.
You're 11 grand deep right there.
Yeah. But I had wasted way, way more than that in my life on alcohol. See, so now I quit wasting my money and start investing my money into me and my family and that sort of stuff. So that was in June, August. We went back down for that live training for the 3 days. And one of those days was on a Sunday. And John, you know, I knew John was a pastor, and he told everybody, because there was, I forget, the very first one we went to, there was probably 300-400 people there. They've had as many as 3,000-4,000 people at one of those now, but I was at the second one, I think, that they ever did. It was still getting started. And he said, hey, I'm going to do a service. You're welcome to, anybody can come, even though there's people from all religions all over the country, world were there. He said, I'm going to do a service. Anybody's welcome to come, but no, I'm going to talk about God and Jesus. Yep. And I wasn't a Christian at that time. I hadn't even thought about being one. But I liked John. I liked hearing him talk. I didn't care what he was talking about. I just liked to hear him talk. So I went to that thing, and, you know, it was kind of interesting because, you know, I would always respect people who were saying a prayer. I'd bow my head, close my eyes, and even though I wasn't on that team, I had respect for people like that. So at the end, he said, you know, everybody bow their heads, I'm gonna, you know, share a prayer. And he was saying his prayer. And then toward the end, he wasn't done. He said, don't raise your head. But he said, anybody who's not a follower of Christ, he said, if you would, just raise your head and look at me for a minute. Everybody else, keep your head down. Greg, you didn't know how bad I want to keep my head down. Because I could have fooled everybody, right? Because nobody knew if I was or I wasn't.
Right.
But my integrity, by that point, 4 years of working on me, my integrity wouldn't let me keep my head down, because I just had to do it. So I raised my head up and listened to what all he was saying. And he said, if you want to invite Christ into your life and, you know, raise your hand, repeat after me. And my hand went up, and I was like, what's happening here? And I accepted Christ right there with John Maxwell that day. And he gave me a signed Bible, a Maxwell Leadership Bible. I got it sitting over here. And, you know, if you don't know about that Bible, it's basically where he shares, it's a real Bible, but it's got text boxes of all the stuff he teaches, where it actually comes from in the scripture. You know, what's funny is I'll read what he teaches, and I understand that, and I get that, and I'll read that, the Bible verses that go with it, and I don't even see how they connect most of the time.
It's a gift that people have to do that, you know, to be able to translate biblical reference and material into a common language that makes sense to me anyway. I might be like you. I might be a little slow. I don't know, Mike.
I know I'm slow, but I read it, you know, 2 years. I think 2 years after that, I read the Bible cover to cover, because I didn't want to be, nothing against people who are Christians who hadn't read the Bible. But before I was a Christian, I talked to a lot of people who said they were Christians who hadn't read the Bible. I couldn't comprehend that. How could that be? So I didn't want to be one of those, you know what, yeah. I'm saying, modeling. So I read it cover to cover, student version. And then I got baptized and all that sort of thing. But even before any of that happened, when I was leading those lean teams and I was talking about Seven Habits and all the other books, I would always carry in a backpack. I had the Seven Habits book and all the other books I was reading. I'd have about 8 or 10 different books when I was leading lean events. And whenever I'd reference something, somehow I could remember which book it was in and about where it was at. And I'd pull out the book because I wanted them to see the book in case they wanted to read it. But I also want them to know where I was getting it from. Plus, I could also say, Dr. Covey says this. And if that was pretty sharp, they didn't hold it against me. So I could tell them the stuff that might sting a little without me stinging them. Like, let Dr. Covey sting them. And then I can keep the relationship going. But they heard from somebody who's an expert. And, you know, I'm just old Mac Story, nobody. But
you got your point, man.
Yep. And so, but a lot of people would come up at break and they'd say, man, are you a pastor? I'd be like, no, I ain't a pastor. I'm the farthest thing from a pastor. You probably can imagine. He said, well, all that stuff you're saying is straight from the Bible. I said, I hear that it is, but I don't know that it is. But even today, people say that a lot still. They, you know, people who really know the Bible and the scripture, which I don't, because I can't remember that. This other stuff, it sticks with me and I don't have to remember it. Like I said, I ain't going to learn nothing. I got to study because I don't. I ain't putting that much energy. I did that enough in that college. I didn't want to go get that degree. I did that and I made pretty much straight A's, but I don't remember none of it. I don't remember nothing. I went to college.
But you said the key was it allows you to open the door to your next step. And, you know, that's how life sometimes is, you know, when you don't always know why you're going through something, but then one day you're like, oh, okay, that's why that had to happen. And my wife and I have been talking just this morning and last night. She's getting involved in this women's prison ministry.
Oh, wow. What's the name of it?
It's Kairos. You probably heard of it.
I haven't heard of that one, but we supported a prison fellowship for 3 or 4 years, but we talk about that separate. Go ahead.
So she was just talking about, she didn't know if she wanted to go or not because we had this trip planned for Kentucky. And about the time the Kentucky thing didn't work out, this prison ministry opened up. And then the days, oddly enough, she looks at the calendar. She says, okay, I can't not do this because these Saturdays are open. And that happened to be the Saturdays that the prison ministry event was happening. So it, you just don't know, you know. We just rowing the boat. We ain't driving it.
Yeah, it's awesome. We're along for the ride. And, you know, it was the Warden Exchange is a program we supported. They go, the prison wardens, about 20 to 40 of them, usually have seemed to be about 30 or 40. They went through a 9-month transformational program. They were doing something every week for 9 months. And Rhea and I were something for 2 or 3 of those weeks. It was us, a couple of online sessions with them. And then we also 3 or 4 times, I can't remember, at the end of the year, we got, or somewhere in the beginning, the middle, or the end, we actually go speak in person. So the first interaction with them was out in San Quentin, Petaluma, California. We went and met and spoke with them. Actually, Rhea spoke that time and by herself. And then we got to tour San Quentin with all these prison wardens. I mean, we were everywhere and we were being led by trustees, all the, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 inmates there. They was out on the yard. They was everywhere they are like normal. And we was going through and we got to go through the gas chamber and through their old dungeon they had. And I mean, it was an amazing visit, but I missed most of that 2-hour tour because one of the trustees, I'm a connector. I was connected with these guys. And one of them come up at the end and said, or not at the end, but at the beginning was wanting to know what prison I was from. I was like, I'm not a warden. And I told him what we were doing. And then he was really interested in that. We're trying to help the warden be better people for their staff and for the population of the prison. And so I started, he wanted to know how I got into it. I told him the story about the 7 habits. And then he said, teach me those 7 habits. He had a post-it, stack of post-its and a pencil.
Wow. And
the whole tour, I was teaching him the 7 habits and he was taking notes like nonstop. And he'd been in there 20 something years. Don't know if he's ever going to get out, but he understood if he'll apply those principles in prison, his life can be better. And I mean, it was phenomenal. And that's why I say I would love to have seen that tour, probably a once in a lifetime experience, but what I'd really rather do is help that guy right there. That's why I'm talking to you. That's why I talk to people all the time, all hours of the day and night, 7 days a week, holidays. I tell people I'm always open, but I ain't always available. Right now I'm wide open, but if somebody's calling, I ain't available. Right. And I just share with people and I'll do it right here, you know, with your audience, my cell phone, this one right here, 334-728-4143. People can call me. Some people say, why do you give out your number like that? I'm like, well, I want people to call me so I can help them.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to help people if you don't get in touch with them, isn't it?
Yep. They said, well, how you give your number out like that? I said, because nobody hardly ever calls. But there really is a lot of people, but not for the number of people I tell that number to. Yeah. I tell that number to tens of thousands of people. You hear that number, you know, all across. I tell it when I'm speaking on stage at conferences all over the place. But I got probably 20 or 30 people I'm mentoring on a constant basis. But I talk to random people probably almost every day, sometimes 2 or 3 hours a call.
Well, our podcast, Mike, doesn't reach as many as Joe Rogan, but might be close. Might be close.
Well, maybe somebody will call me if they want to talk about personal growth, leadership development, workforce development. Construction industry is actually our biggest client base. Manufacturing is probably the smallest because they won't slow down to work to actually develop people. Most right. companies won't. There's right. a few that will, but they got to have exceptional leaders.
That's
but
right.
construction industry, man, I mean, even on like LinkedIn, the construction industry is like on fire. People from all kinds of construction industry, they always putting out information relative to competency, character, people, communication. It's just phenomenal. I don't see that. It seems like that's the main industry I see it with. You see a little bit from every industry, but the construction folks are special, man.
And I think it's too that people have woken up to the fact that they have to make their workplace somewhere that is a destination workplace because they're so shorthanded.
Yeah.
You can't run a 1940 style company anymore. You have to understand what different generations of people need in their role. And you got to offer a career path and you got to offer something other than a harsh word. And we're getting there. It's coming around.
Yeah.
Well, Mac, this has been phenomenal. I'm watching the clock to be respectful of everybody's time. Tell us where I got, you've seen me making notes here throughout the thing. I got a bunch of stuff I got to get this thing going to work on. So thank you for the nuggets. But tell us where people can find out about you and about Rhea and what y'all do collectively and separately.
Yeah, so best place to find out about me is bluecollarleadership.com. And Rhea's name is like key of the car, but with an R, R-I-A. And our last name, Story, S-T-O-R-Y, like the book. So RhiaStory.com is the best place to find out about her. She really focuses on personal development, leadership development for women. But we speak together pretty much 95% of the time. Sometimes it's 100% women in the audience. Sometimes we're speaking to construction companies standing in a wet gravel lot with a tent out in a construction area. So, you know, that's the best two places. I've got the Blue Collar Leadership podcast. She has a Fearfully and Wonderfully Me podcast. We'll say, if you want to preview any of these books, I got 7 of them are in my Blue Collar Leadership series. There's go to bluecollarleadership.com, type in /download. That'll get you straight to it. But you also can go to that homepage and just scroll down all the way to the bottom right corner. There's a button to download. And I don't need your email. You don't have to subscribe to nothing. You can click right there and read a PDF. You can download it and share it with your coworkers if you want, that sort of thing. We've got a, on the menu there, you'll see online courses. We got a ridiculous offer for people now for like these books. Like I got one of my books, most popular, is Blue Collar Leadership, Leading from the Frontline. It's intended for the entry-level worker. And it's how do I lead myself well? Basically, how do I develop my character so that I can influence people with moral authority, which is what they need to do when they get a formal position of authority. So it's really, that book helps start developing your pipeline for your succession ladder for leaders if you want to do that. But it also helps people work together really effectively. So like that book, we got a Blue Collar Leadership and Teamwork, 30 Traits of High Impact Players. Sometimes you got people who work well by themselves, but they don't work well with others. So the Teamwork book's full of 30 chapters on how to be, you know, be trustworthy, be growth oriented, be humble, be responsible, all these things you need to be a high impact team player. And so I'm just sharing, those are just 2 of the books. But again, there's 7 in that series. And the video series is basically a 7.5-hour course on those books. And right now we got 4 courses, about to have 5, and there's going to be 15 eventually. But it's basically 15 minutes per chapter. So there's 30 chapters. So it ends up being about 7.5 hours. And we're giving a crazy deal on that. And we got a construction client, a large MEP client, the VP of electrical construction, Jason Denham. Kilgore Industries out in Texas, he's actually subscribed to the what we call the All Access Pass. He gets access to all the courses we have available, no matter if it's 4 right now or 15 later. It's only like $2,000 a month, and all your folks can go through it. You subscribe to it. You can unsubscribe at any time. So you can imagine if you had 1,000 people, 1,000 people could go through basically for $2 a piece. They could go through, at the moment, 4 8-hour courses. They get a download, fill in the blanks. I mean, it's, I'm trying to live this stuff I'm teaching, Greg. You know, live out of abundance.
Mac, that offer is phenomenal. If you think about the number of headcount you can reach with that amount of money. So y'all go check this thing out. Mac's story, Blue Collar Leadership. If you've heard where the roots of his teachings and his lifestyle came from, that's going to be hard to beat. Mr. Covey would be proud. Dr. Covey would be proud, as well as John Maxwell. So, Mac, really appreciate you taking time with us. It's been a blast. Keep digging, keep climbing, as y'all say. I say, yeah, keep digging. Y'all keep climbing, because it's all about the grind and making it happen daily. So thanks, everyone, for joining us today. It's been so rewarding for me to hear the backstory of Mac's story. What the stuff without the fluff? Is that what we're leaving with? I love that.
That's what they say. I don't know. I believe it. That's what I'm shooting for.
Well, I got to go reread it with that in mind. So, but thank y'all for joining us. Another episode straight out of Crumpton in the can. If you want to hear some more, you can go to gregcrumpton.com. You'll see a roulette wheel that spins around more like the, it looks more like the wheel on the Price is Right. You can click on whatever you want to learn about, podcast or writings or just other companies I'm involved with and having a good time. But check it out. Check out Mac's story. Check out Rhea's story. R-I-A is her name. And until next time, thanks so much, Mac.
Thank you.
Look forward to talking to you soon, buddy.
Yes, sir. Thank you.